We're in the middle of Mitzvah Kuf Samech Gimel 163, and we are discussing the requirement to check vegetables for insects still, and the different halachos that govern a complete insect, and how the halachos that govern a complete insect are more, or any complete animal, with some exceptions, as we'll see, are stricter than the general regular kashrus rules, where something is batel, nullified, 1 in 60, because the thing is not batel ever, even if it's in a gazillion times as much, then it's not batel.
They're talking insects?
Yes, dead or alive.
Dead or alive.
It's not going to stay alive for long once it gets mixed into your soup. But it does matter whether it's dead or alive. So let's say
inside an apple.
Well, inside an apple, it depends. Because what we learn when it's inside an apple, if it developed in the apple when the apple was detached from the ground, then the insect is allowed. But if it had developed in the apple on the ground, then it's not allowed. But that, again, would normally not be a case, as we pointed out last time, of bittel at all, of nullification, because it's easily visible. So when something's easily visible, it's just sitting there for you to see. It's considered to be a mixture. It's not a taruvis. And that would just be considered like eating the insect by itself. So last time, we mentioned that there seems to be an opinion that the way the Chinuch is interpreting the Yerushalmi is that the Yerushalmi says the Eretz Yisrael Talmud does not seem to say like the Talmud Bavli, the Babylonian Talmud, that seems to say that there was this case where a mouse was mixed into a certain mixture, and the Paskin over there, that it was nullified 1 in 1,000. So it says, the Gemara says, that our Gemara, the Talmud Bavli, says even 1 in 1,000 is not. I mean, there's no shear whatsoever for the nullification, but the Talmud Yerushalmi seems to say it's 1 in 1,000, or some say interpreted, some say even 1 in 960. So close to 1,000. But the Beis Yosef in Simen Kuf, Simen 100 in Yoredeah, it says, brings interpretations of these Yerushalmi, that that's not what the Yerushalmi means at all. The Yerushalmi says, how could it say that a mouse is batel 1 in 60? A mouse is big enough that you can recognize it. You should just be able to take it out of the mixture. And why should it have to be nullified at all? So it says, ba'achbara does not mean, he brings proofs that Achbar was a name of a place, that there was a name of a place called Achbar or something like that. And the case was, no, not that the place was mixed into the soup, but that there was, this case happened in this certain place called Achbar, and it was not a mouse that got mixed into this mixture, but rather it was a very strong tasting type of birya, of full creature. And indeed, the full creature wasn't there. Either the full creature had disintegrated, or they did take out the full creature. It was only the taste that remained in the mixture. In which case, the Amora over there, Paskin, that it was batel 1 in 1,000, because it wouldn't be batel 1 in 60, it has a very strong taste. You could even taste it even if it were less than the 60th of the mixture. So he said that in 1,000, it would be batel. So according to that interpretation of the Yerushalmi, there's no disagreement whatsoever with the Talmud Bavli, and everybody agrees that there is no shear whatsoever for a beria becoming batel. Even 1 in several thousand would still be a problem.
You're talking about one that is visible.
Right. An insect that would ordinarily be impermissible. If there's an insect that's invisible, for example, then you would, first of all, if it's really invisible, then you're allowed to eat it. You can't, but then the question comes with, as we discussed before, what if there's something that you can see, but it's not recognizable as an insect, either because you can see a black dot, but you can't see if it's an insect unless you looked at it with a magnifying glass, or if there's an insect expert, such as Rabbi Fai, who wrote B'dikato, he said he can tell you that's an insect that's found in this type of produce, that indeed is an insect. So would that be considered to be visible or not? So according to, as I pointed out, there's a compromise opinion of Rav Asher Weiss. So Rav Asher Weiss writes that he thinks that you shouldn't eat it, that if you have the little black dot just sitting on your finger that you know is an insect, but you can't visually recognize it as an insect,
so you
can't just stick it on your...
You know, you
see it's a black dot, but you...
But if you looked at it
under a magnifying glass, then you would see that it's an insect. So you can't just take that insect and stick it on your tongue and eat it. That would not be allowed, because we're not really sure whether this counts as visible or invisible. But he says that this that an insect like this would not be subject to the principle that it's not batal. Right? So, in other words, so if an insect that this tiny that you could only see a black dot got mixed into a mixture, you would say that it is batal, because and you may still eat the mixture even if it's batal 1 in 60, which probably is going to be. But because that's really just eating it by itself is a really a shaila and this or deraisa. But when it gets mixed into the mixture, as we pointed out, then on a deraisa level it is batal. The chumra that it's only that it's not batal at all is only derabanan. So he feels that in the derabanan shaila of whether it can be batal at all, you can be lenient if it's so tiny. Another consideration to be lenient sometimes is, as we're going to see in a second, the real reason behind the principle that the Chazal instituted that an insect is never batal is that it's a chash of a thing. It's the institution of beria means that when there's something important, but maybe the whole institution of beria does not apply to these tiny insects because they have no importance, because everybody thinks they're gross, everybody thinks nobody thinks twice about them. So in that case, there are some poskim, because they were trying to justify the practice, that people didn't check their vegetables as carefully as might seem to be indicated by the Shulchan Aruch. So they said maybe one of the reasons for this is that these tiny little insects that nobody even gives a second thought to would be batal even deraisa, right? Even derabanan. Deraisa, they're certainly batal. It's not a shaila and issa deraisa when they're so hard to find, and you can't extract them with great difficulty. But even derabanan, maybe they'll be batal because they have no chashivas, they have no importance to them. Another suggestion that's famously was made by Rabbi Yonasan Eibishitz. So Rabbi Yonasan Eibishitz said that he said the real case that was the big was the target of a lot of discussion of the postgame was really flour, because flour is something that is stored for a long period of time. So the flour in Europe would always develop insects called milben. What's milben? So Moshe Bai, in his book, he tries to identify milben as a certain type of insect. So he says, based on this, you can see that it's very tiny, but they still called it visible. So therefore, we hold that even things that are very tiny, but you can only see a black dot, are visible. But the Bajus is pointed out in the Sefer Lachem Yel Ochla, as I was talking about last time, is that milben is not a specific type of insect. It's just a general Yiddish term for any type of insect that might infest flour. So people were not sifting their flour very carefully, because it was stored for a long period of time, especially in the summer, it would develop insects. So that what Rabbi Yonasan Eibishitz's suggestion is that we have a principle that we learned last time, that something's only usher because of beria when it's usher from the beginning of its existence, right? Has to be intrinsically prohibited, like an ant. There's never a time where an ant is usher. Like Gid HaNoshe, the sciatic nerve in an animal, as soon as the conception of the animal occurs, then the Gid HaNoshe is usher, as soon as it starts developing in utero. So he says, well, maybe these little insects are not considered usher from the beginning of their existence, because if they develop in the flower and they don't go on the ground, then maybe they're mutter. Because, well, obviously we assume that they did go on the ground or in the air or something at some point, so you can't eat them. Maybe since at the very moment that they popped out of their egg, or some spontaneously generated, as take your pick, in the flower, so at that point they were still mutter. So they only became usher at a later period of time, and so maybe they should not be considered to be a beria, and they would be batal. But other posts, first of all, Rabbi Yonasan Eibishitz is right. He says that really he's just trying to justify the practice, but really you should not rely on this novel idea that he had. I can make it. He should not rely on this novel idea that he has ideally. And the Chavos Das, as quoted there, so as the Chavos Das says, no, that's not correct at all. Because this, when something, it means that something's not prohibited intrinsically. It just means that basically it's kosher, but there's something else that caused it to become a problem. Like, for example, a chicken that started out perfectly kosher, but you need to shecht it. It's a kosher species, but you need to shecht. This is not a kosher species. This is the din. A chicken is supposed to be kosher its entire existence. In other words, it's supposed to be shechted properly, and you're supposed to be able to eat it. But this, intrinsically, it just has to jump off, and it becomes usher. It's a type of species that can intrinsically become usher by itself. He says he doesn't think the Rabbi Yonis and Ibishitz is right at all, but that's again, yeah. So there are poskim nowadays who say it's usher to eat blueberries, of course. But
wait,
according to
course,
I mean, of course there are people, you can find people who say anything, but according to the principle of lachem yeh lo'achla, there's a doubt as to whether the blueberries are not, according to this, I mean, maybe some people say they are, but we assume that blueberries are not what we call muchzak betolayim. There are no bugs there a majority of the time, so you can be pretty sure that there will be a bug present. Maybe the bug is invisible. Maybe, and then midaraisa, it would take, since it would take such a great effort to extract all the bugs from blueberries, so midaraisa, they're going to be batel. So therefore, if you just wash them, and your reason, or maybe if you don't wash them, but probably wash them anyway, but if you can be reasonably sure that if there's a serious doubt, you have no reason to assume that there are bugs here, so then you have a right to go leniently. Just wash them, and if you want to be extra, extra frum, you have to know what the mitzvah is. If there really are no bugs in blueberries, then this would be silly. But if there were a reasonable, if there were a chance that there could be some bugs in blueberries sometimes, then, if you want to be extra frum, so you wouldn't use them without grinding them up. That article that I sent you, I probably nobody read it, but I was very excited. I think this is the only time I ever sent an article to the Sefer HaChinuch group. I was so excited by it because I was searching online for Lachem Yeh Lo'achla because I wanted to buy the book. Because as I said last time, I have it on my phone only, so it's hard to read. So I wanted to get the actual book. So I searched for it online to see where it could be purchased. Eventually, I found where it can be purchased. It has to be shipped from Israel. They don't sell it anywhere in America, I don't think. But I found this article online by Rabbi Zev Weitman. You know who that is? Rabbi Zev Weitman is the supervising rabbi of the head, Mav Rava Machsher of Tnuva, which is the main Israeli agricultural cooperative. It's responsible for most of the produce in Israel. So he's a very important rabbinic figure in Israeli society. So he wrote this article. I was surprised that he was so lenient, actually, but whatever. So he quotes Lachem Yeh Lo'achla. That's why it came up in my search. But it very concisely presented all the reasons to be lenient. You have, even if you don't necessarily accept every single one of these considerations that we've mentioned in this year so far, certainly with a combination of all of them, especially with the idea that midaraisa it's going to be batel, and maybe it's too small, and maybe they have no chashivos, and maybe they're probably not there in the first place, so how much do you have to look, and different vegetables, and the Rabbi Yonis and Ibishitz also, and maybe they're not even a berry, even though that's a shvach, that's the shvachest one. But there are a lot of other considerations to be lenient. So he says in the article, his main gripe is that he says in Israel, unlike America, in America you have it more unofficially in Chutz Laretz, but in America, in Israel, you have an institutionalized difference between what we call kashrut regila, regular kashrus, and kashrut limahadrin, mahadrin kashrus, of the higher level of kashrus, which is the kashrut regila is given generally by the rabbi. So then with the mahadrin department, there's what we call rabbanut mahadrin. That's the state-sponsored rabbanut that has the higher level. And you have the private hechsherim, the good private hechsherim, like the Eidech Haredes, like Rabbi Rubin, like things, people like that. So you have good private hechsherim, which are probably better than the even the Rabbanut Mahadrin. But anyway, but you have certain institutionalized chumras and kulas based on whether you want kashrut regila or mahadrin kashrus. Like the kashrut regila, for example, they're makel on powdered milk that was not under rabbinic supervision, but regular milk, even the kashrut regila is makben achol v'israel. But the mahadrin kashrus won't accept powdered milk, any milk products whatsoever, unless they had hashgacha from the beginning, certain different levels in the kashrus of meat, whatever, things like that. Just how stringently you take the supervision, whereas in America, there's no shaychus. I mean, you have, like, for example, the OU, which has many kulas, but it's the best in terms of implementing their policies, it's probably the best Hechsher. Whether you agree with all their policies is a different story, but you know, something, you know, a certain product that has an OU that you can't tell what their coolers are going to be. It depends, all depends on what the OU poskim say. So there are makel on Chol of Yisrael, but there are machmer many other things that certain other Hechsherim are makel on. Like, for example, the Star K is very lenient about what's considered to be Bishul Yisrael. It's sufficient by the Star K if they have, I think, a little bulb in the oven that provides a tiny amount of heat. So there's at least some source. So that's left on all the time. And then the Goyim can light the fires. And even though this thing is not really contributing to the cooking of the food, so they're very lenient. OU does not accept that leniency. There's no institutionalized. In other words, in Israel, it's the regular kashrus has a certain set of leniencies, and the mahadran has a certain set of stringencies. It's not it's not subject to each individual hechsher. Of course, the private hechsher might have even more stringencies than the rabbinate, but that's anyway. It's more institutionalized in Israel than it is in Chutz Laaretz, where the more liberal hechsherim could have chumras or kulos you can't really predict. Okay, but Rabbi Weitman's main gripe in this article is he says, even in the kashrut regilah, in the regular kashrus in Israel, they only allow the restaurants under the supervision to use gush katif lettuce, to use lettuce that's has a proper that was grown in special conditions to ensure it being bug free. He says this is ridiculous. He says it doesn't. I'm not saying us or mutter, but it doesn't fit in with the whole system. The whole system is that they have certain leniencies. Some of the leniencies they have in the kashrus are much less reasonable than the leniencies about the bugs and about bugs and vegetables. These have a very very serious arguments to be lenient on the bugs and vegetables.
This is Rabbi Weitman
talking. So he says he feels that in the regular kashrut system, of course they should be allowed to use, and it's not if it's infested mamish, but if they have all these leniencies we've been discussing, they should certainly be allowed to rely on that. And they're Mahadran kashrus, that's like we said, they're always pious people who are going to go the extra mile, but that shouldn't be the regular. He also says that it's what we call a chumra dasi li dekula. It's a stringency that leads to leniency because, why? Because the gush katif lettuce, what does it say if you read the package carefully? It says, must be washed before using. Why is that?
Because they probably
use
a bug spray.
No, that's not, as opposed to, let's say, the pre-packaged kosher salads like the Positive and the Bodic and things like that, which are ready to use. But the gush katif lettuce says, or the spices, they have dill and other things like that, says it has to be washed before use. Why? Because the system is only designed to keep out the bugs that are hard to remove. That are the tiny little bugs that will attach themselves to the produce, whatever. It's not designed to keep out. There could be other bugs that got in, but they are designed to make sure that at least those bugs that can still get in are at least easily removed by washing. They feel that they're not, it's not, so he says, people don't realize this. People think that gush katif lettuce is just ready to use out of the bag. So if you go to, he says, gush katif lettuce straight out of the bag is less kosher than regular non-gush katif lettuce that's been washed thoroughly. He says, we much make much more sense for the regular kashrus restaurants to buy, they have to know that this has to be washed, as opposed to not realizing that even the gush katif needs to be washed. I thought that was extremely, extremely reasonable. You think he'd have more clout, being the chief rabbi of Tanu. Ovigrara Deveria continues to say, Rachinuch, now that we already started talking about whole insects, Damrinan de chashiva velo batla, that it's chashiv, it has importance, so it is, doesn't become batal. Chazal tell us that this does not apply only to whole insects or other animals. So anything that's choshev is not batal. Kigona gozei perech, a certain kind of nuts, rimoni badan, and a certain kind of pomegranate, the chavios stumos, closed bottles of wine. I mean, chavios really means, a chavis is really an amphora, it's a Roman type of jug. Gigantic jug, but we could translate it to nowadays as closed bottles of wine are not batal because they have chashivas, as opposed to if you have a huge open vat of wine and you have a little bit of non-kosher wine that falls in, as long as it's not avodah zara yenesef mamish. So, or maybe we're not talking about yenesef, maybe we're talking about orla, maybe we're talking about some tevel, something that hasn't been said, the ties haven't been separated, some reason that the wine might not be kosher. So if it's a bottle that gets mixed in with other bottles, then it's not batal at all, because that has more of a chashivas, an importance to it. The chalfei tradin, Kilchei kruv, udlas, these different types of vegetables that were considered very chashuv, the kikro shel balabayis, and homemade bread, as opposed to store-bought bread, which I guess not as chashuv, but homemade bread is very chashuv. The Rambam, zichrono levracha, kasav, the lav davka shiva dvar meil, the Rambam says a very reasonable thing, that it don't mean that they're just listing the things that had important, that had special importance in those days, but nowadays, we have different things that are chashuv. Elu hayu achashuvas bizman chachmei mishna zichronim levracha. So these were what used to be important in those times. And nowadays, anything that's important that has a specific, I don't know, like truffles, something like that. So truffles maybe would not be, not chocolate truffles.
I know.
So
expensive
one. So truffles maybe would not be batal nowadays.
V'zesha marnu deviria lo betela.
The chavanas alomar bein chaya bein mesa. So a whole entity is not batal, whether it's alive or dead. V'dafka beri shaisa sura mitchilas beriyasa. That's what we've been talking about. That's something, that has to be something that's intrinsically prohibited from the beginning. Kon behema tmeo sheretz tame, non-kosher animal, non-kosher insect. V'chein gid anosha shegam hu aser mitchilas beriyaso. The same thing, gid anosha. It's all from the beginning if it's aser. V'dafka v'aval behema ksheira mitchilasa. Let's say there was an animal that started out perfectly kosher. The sheep is happily prancing in the field. It's a perfectly kosher sheep at this point. You're not allowed to take a bite out of it, but it could become kosher. V'davka be'oda cha'aya hu she'ena b'teila mishum d'bali chayim chashivi v'lo b'teili. So let's say you happen to know that this sheep became a treifa somehow, and it gets mixed in with tons of other sheep. So while it's alive, it will not be batal, because things that are actually alive, animals, are very important. You're not going to lose track of an animal. It has to maintain its importance. But if you have a slaughterhouse and you have piles of 3,000 dead sheep piled up, and one of them you happen to know is a treifa, so it is going to be batal. The filu shor gadol,
meaning that you could eat it?
Yeah, you could eat all of the sheep in the pile. Even if it's an ox, not even just a little sheep, a huge, gigantic ox. This goes according with Reb Yochanan. It has to be something that is counted. So what does it mean, counted? That it's not sold by, I'd like a handful of wheat kernels. I don't know what. So that's something that's it's not sold one by one. So wheat kernels are not darko limnos, but something, an item that's sold one by one, where in terms of a number, not in terms of weight, not in terms of or something else. It has to be, if it's specifically counted, then it's not batal. So what does that mean? Kilomar hadvarim shadarkan shalbrios limnos derech hashivos pamid. It has to be something that people normally sell by counting. Shaninu sheinam betelos kigon osan shiva hamenuos lemala val shor echad ein darkan shalbrios lachshiva believam pamid. But one dead ox is not something that's always done by counting, that people consider each individual one significant. This is as opposed to the opinion of Reish Lakish. We know that with whom does Rabbi Yochanan always argue? With his student, his Talmud Chaver, Reish Lakish. So Reish Lakish says it's not es shadar kolimnos, the things that people generally count. It's kol shadar kolimnos, that anything that can ever be counted, all things are considered to be chashuv important, and they're not batal. So then this would be, that according to that opinion, then this would be a problem, because it is something that is counted. The dead oxen can be counted, so you'd be more stringent in this regard, that Rabbi or Reish Lakish would not allow for the nullification of an entire dead ox. But nobody sells, for example, like I was talking about, if you're buying barley, you buy barley in a bag. You buy wheat kernels in a bag. Nobody sells them by number. I'm selling you 500 wheat kernels. It's never done. V'fi she'en roi l'fi shav v'lo krova hana'aso leiv b'nei adam kemo osan shiva dvarim. So a dead ox is not as close to being enjoyed by human tastes as these seven things, which are considered to be so chashuv that they're never batal. Val tispale lomar. You can ask a very serious question what I just told you. What is that? There is a principle called chaticha haru'uya lehiskabed. One of the things that's never butel is a portion of meat that is important and can be served to guests. So, for example, let's say you're making schnitzel, and one of the schnitzels is asur somehow. It's really asur. It hasn't been shechted properly. And you make a whole batch of schnitzel, and you realize that one of them is really asur. So then the entire batch of schnitzel is asur, because each piece of schnitzel is what we call a chaticha rulis kaved, that it's a nice piece that can be served in front of guests, or a whole steak or something like that. A whole steak would be considered to be a chaticha rulis kaved. So based on that, you can ask a very serious question on what I just told you. You're telling me what? Chaticha achas v'menu ha'ruhu yulis kaved b'fnei orchim techoshe v'lo tibatel v'chulo b'yachad yibatel. So one steak from the... Right, so one steak from the ox would not be batal, but the whole ox is batal. What are you talking about?
I thought that example they usually gave of roe from butter was that that if you're at a cookout or something like that, and you have two kosher hamburgers, and then somebody comes along and puts down a non-kosher hamburger with it, that you can eat all three, but that's not the case. Yeah.
A piece of cholent meat, if it's a piece of cholent meat or something, that one piece of cholent meat is not a chaticha rulis kabed. That's something that you just throw into the cholent and you serve in that way. But if it's a steak, it's important. If it's an important portion of meat they place in front of guests, then you're right, it would not be batal. Right, that's true. That's also the rabbanon, of course. The right, so there's no, this principle doesn't apply. So, ki ha'emes kein hu, shechaticha achas menu ana asa krova v'lei b'nei adam krova ileo machshiva. So a whole ox, it's almost too much. You don't really think about it. You don't even think about it. It's chashivas. But when there's a steak, that's something your brain can process in terms of, ooh, this is going to be delicious. Well, really? The ox is too much. Or, I have to process it. I have to take out all the chalev, and I have to cut it into steaks, and so much processing. Even think about it so much.
I mean, of course, you look at it and you're like, ooh.
For example, in a shucked house where it turns out, somebody forgot to mark an animal that was trafed, properly, and it got mixed in, but that's a big loss for the. Well,
then you're allowed. Then it's allowed.
I know, but right, but in that case, certainly it's much more chashiv than like one steak sitting on in a grill or something.
Is that true?
Well, for them, it certainly is.
For them,
you're
because
talking about $1,000, a couple $1,000 loss or something.
Right, it's more expensive. I don't know if it's more chashiv defined the way we've been defining it. V'alkein amru ba shaloti batel v'afal pi shekulo meis ibatel v'dazeh v'habinehu. So know the principle that I just explained to you and understand it. Thank you. Yeah. We've been commanded by the Sefer HaChinuch to understand the Sefer. We got to do it now. V'yesh min ha-mefarshim she'amru she'din chaticha ru le'hiskabed de'lo batla lo ne'mar ela b'mevusheles. Furthermore, the principle of chaticha ru le'hiskabed, this nice piece of meat that you'd serve to guests, is only shayach when it actually is ready to serve to guests, i.e. cooked. But when it's raw, it still would be batel. It's not talking about that right now it could actually be served to guests. It's talking about that this is the type of piece of meat that could be served to guests. And both opinions are brought in the Shulchan Aruch. I believe that now lechatchila, that's correct. Lechatchila, be considered to be mevatelis lechatchila. But if somebody did it, let's say your live-in maid, ground up this chaticha rulis kabed and mixed it in, then yeah, that would be batal. That's true. Also, it's important to know that chaticha rulis kabed only applies when the piece of meat itself is intrinsically usr, that it came from an animal that it was an avela, that it was not shechted properly, or that it was a trefa animal. But a chaticha rulis kaved that absorbed the taste from something that's impermissible. So, for example, if it was not salted properly and absorbed the taste of blood, it absorbed the taste of the principle of chaticha rulis kaved, because it only became usr based on something that it absorbed and not based on the intrinsically prohibited status of this object. Umina mefarshim gamkein shamru delo nemar chaticha rulis she'ena betelo ela kashi asura machmas atzma. That's what I just said. Never mind. Aval im nafal iser besocha v'nasa matam betelo havya. And that's in fact how we do paskin, that it has to be an intrinsically prohibited meat piece. It says in Avodah Zarah, though you haven't gotten there yet, right? That's an Ayin Dalad. So it says in Masechet Avodah Zarah that if a drop of milk falls on a piece of meat, so then it's not butl. So baser b'chol. Yesa rubei prate and yanim eila b'chulim b'Avodah Zarah. And the rest of the many myriad details of this mitzvah of chaticha rulis gabe is found in Masechet Chulin and Masechet Avodah Zarah. I mean the mitzvah, not the mitzvah of bugs also. The mitzvah of the fact that you're not allowed to eat bugs is found in these two places. V'nohegez b'chol makam v'chol zman b'zchar munikevos. Males and females, over alev achal b'mezid birya shlema legamre t'meya. So if you ate a whole insect, bein chaya bein mesa, whether it's alive or dead, it's going to be dead by the time you swallow it, probably, but when it goes into your mouth, then it becomes... water, okay, fine. But that's what he was analyzing the general issues. But I found that very strange. Although he quotes that from some earlier sources that say something like that, but I would have thought, Pashut, that the whole principle of birya means before it enters your mouth. Even though, for many principles, you're not really considered eating until it goes into your throat. So, for example, we didn't really discuss this, so we're talking about nevela, but we should have mentioned also that when we're talking about the tumah of nevela, that dead animals that have not been properly shechted render you ritually impure. So there is a different halacha that governs the nevela of a bird as opposed to the nevela of an animal, which is if you lift it up or you touch it, so it does not render you tameh. It only renders you tameh when it goes into your throat. When you swallow, when you basically swallow it, you can put it in your throat and take it out. But when it goes into your throat, so then you considering it to be eaten. It's based on a pasuk that says that eating a nevela renders you tameh. So that's talking about something different from the other pasuk that talks about nevela by an animal, which renders you tameh based on touching or lifting. So that is a unique halacha by a nevela from a bird, which also renders you tameh when it goes in your throat, as well as the clothes that you're wearing. But for most of these halachas we're talking about eating, it doesn't make sense. Chaticha rilis gabed also becomes unchaticha rilis gabed when it goes into your mouth. We're all talking about all these things by the way, the time that they go into your mouth and not the time that they're swallowed. I find that opinion to be very strange. Afilu pechusa min achardal. They can get rid of the whole halacha that way. It just doesn't. It really doesn't make sense. Afilu ha'isa srucha, even if it was gross, because bugs are intrinsically inedible, right? So bugs, nobody really likes to eat these types of bugs. So therefore, it doesn't matter that. Right, so it doesn't really matter that it's not humanly edible, because no bugs are humanly edible. So the normal rule that if you eat, so for example, you know, chametz on Pesach, that's completely disgusting. It's completely not edible at all. So you're not chayev to the penalty of karis and malkus, because it's only subject to edible things. But here, bugs by definition are gross. So bein shehaisa. That's another thing, by the way, because some people claim there is a principle that misasek. So some people say that eating a bug when you're eating a piece of produce is like misasek. That's like doing something without even thinking about it, which is a lower level even than shogig. There are three levels. One is doing something b'mezid on purpose. One is doing something b'shogig, meaning you didn't do it on purpose. You did it accidentally. You certainly didn't have in mind to violate the sin. But really, you should have exercised more caution to prevent yourself from doing it. And there's an even lower level, which is called misasik, which is you cannot have been expected to have any idea that what you're doing is prohibited. You don't have any intention whatsoever of even doing the action. So, for example, like on Shabbos, we all know what it means to violate Shabbos on purpose, but violating Shabbos. So let's say you forget it's Shabbos, and you do something, you know exactly what you're doing, that's prohibited on Shabbos, but you realize afterwards, like, hey, it was Shabbos, that's b'shogeg, because you should have known better, you should remember it was Shabbos. But if you you know, if you walk in front of a light or something that's a motion sensor light, and it's going to go on by you walking, and you would have you had no idea that the light was there. How could you have known that that light was in the that's misasik. It's nothing. It's not. I mean, the difference of the difference of this whole discussion in the Achronim whether there's any level of sin whatsoever, but that's an even lower level than shogig. That's really if not nothing, then close to nothing. So here too, you have no idea that the bug is there. You're not enjoying the bug. You're not doing anything. So that could be a misasik. So there's a principle that eating is not subject to the principle of misasik. Any misasik by eating is considered to be shogig because you get hana, you get enjoyment out of it. So here, this print is very questionable whether we should apply this principle to maybe it really is misasik because you don't get any enjoyment out of the bugs. You really have no idea that the bug is there. It's just inside, ensconced within the floret of the broccoli. And that's very questionable whether you should apply the principle here that misasik is considered to be like shogig, which is, again, another reason. And we have many, many reasons why we've knocked down a lot of the bug issues, at least the level of their abundance, and there's more reason to be lenient about these types of things. So whether it's generated based on reproduction or whether it's spontaneously generated, either way, you're liable to the penalty. And of course, now we know that there is no spontaneously generated. There are no spontaneously generated insects. Rather, they're just so small that you can't see them when they're first hatched. So if you eat the whole thing, then you receive the penalty of lashes. And certainly, even if you don't eat the whole thing, if you gather together enough insects that it forms a kezias, that it's the size of an olive, then you'd also be liable to the penalty. But if you eat a whole ant or mosquito, even if it's less than an olive, then it's going to be then you're going to be chayav. It's not permissible, obviously. It's still prohibited midaraisa to eat any part of a sheretz of a prohibited insect, but it will at least you will at least not receive the penalty of lashes until you either eat a kezias or you eat a whole insect, whichever comes first. Mitzvah Kuf Samech Dalet, Mitzvah 164. Shelo leechol misheretz hamayim, not to eat water shratzim insects. Shelo leechol misheretz hamayim, not to eat water insects. Shenemar al tishaktuas nafshoseichem b'shol asheretz hasharetz. Do not make your souls disgusting from all the creepy things that crawl. Below sitam ubahem venit me sembami. You shall not become defiled through them and impurify yourselves to them. The sheretz hamayim yadu ein yano. So what is a... And that didn't mention sheretz hamayim, by the way, in that pasuk that you'll just know, you'll notice. It was a more general prohibition. So we're going to discuss that in a minute. Shehumi birios ktanos hashatos v'mayim v'hem nikroim sheretz hamayim. Little creepy creatures which swim around in the waters. And those are called sheretz hamayim. V'zeh alav miyuchad bohem bilavad alav hamiyuchad l'dag tomei. So according to the Ritz again, we're following the Rambam here, so there is a separate prohibition which prohibits these little bugs that live in the water, and a separate prohibition which applies to fish that are not kosher. Shein elu b'chlal dogim klal. It's not like, for example, a catfish, which is not a kosher type of fish, but it's clearly a fish. It's not a sheretz. Ki min echad b'fnei atzmo hu legamrei. It's a bug. Zeh das Rambam zichrono levracha b'mikra hazeh shal zeh bal lamed. So the Rambam explains that this extra pasuk, again, it's the Torah says they are not allowed to eat bugs several times. So this pasuk, even though it doesn't mention sheretz hamayim, water explicitly, this is how the Rambam interprets this verse. The Ramban zichrono levracha cholik alav bazeh. The Rambam Nachman does not like this at all. The chosav ki alav bazeh inenu lav miyuchad al shum sheretz. This is just a general statement that you're not allowed to eat sheretzim. This does not carry within it any specific penalty of lashes. You should not eat anything not kosher. That's just the general, just to drive home the point. It's not adding any halachos over here. It says that in Parshas Rei, when it lists again the list of not kosher things. Don't impurify yourselves with all these disgusting things that I prohibited. This is just in this pasuk again. It's general. It doesn't refer to water shretzim. It refers to all the non-kosher species in the world. Anything disgusting is included in this phrase of shikutz. Kemo Kilo bezev velo shekes envas ani. Anos ani. What does it say? What does your vowel say? What?
Anos
ani. Okay. So anything, and again, this says even something that has nothing to do with eating can still be considered to be a sheket. It's disgusting. They all did. They taught the Rambam and the Ramban talk about this at length. It has to do with what it says in the Gemara Makis. It's a very famous Gemara. Achal putisa lo karba. If you eat a certain type of egg, you receive four sets of lashes. Nemala lo kechamish. If you eat an ant, then you have five sets of lashes. Tzira lo kesheish. A gnat. Gnat. Loke sheish, you receive six sets of lashes. V'chol echad yifarish ba'ha in hanira elav ba'inyan. So the Rambam and the Ramban explain this Gemara differently based on the different interpretations of how you count the mitzvahs in the Torah. The imbasi, he's going to explain a little bit. The imbasi lichtov al ta'anosam bedavar kemos shehen. Yarach inyan ad shelo yechilenu klaf gadol. So if I really tried to write a whole monograph to explain the whole difference of opinion between the Rambam and the Ramban, I would need a very large piece of parchment, and I'm not about to do that. I'm trying to write a short book so that my kid can entertain himself on Shabbos afternoons when he has nothing else to do. And I'm not going to do that. Ve'itzei migeder melachtizos. It's beyond the scope of this work, as we say in English nowadays. Bulam lefidaiti ikar machloksam binyan talim lokin beser echad shnei malkios olo. The difference between the Rambam and the Ramban really has to do with whether you can be chayav two sets of lashes for doing one prohibition. Rambam zichron avracha kosa bikari amitzvah sh'asa v'kava b'mas meirim. The Rambam holds very stark. Shelo nilke la'olam al avera achas shtei malkios. If you do one prohibition, one set of malkos per prohibition. V'afilu yavu alea b'kosuv kam alav. And even if it's mentioned many times in the Torah, it's not for extra malkos, it's just for to strengthen the idea. Let's say it said 100 times in the Torah, don't eat pork. No, because you just did the same thing. One thing, you only get one malchus. You only get 100 malchus. Maybe there's nothing new that you're learning out from the fact that the Torah repeats this so many times. Nevertheless, one malchus per prohibition. We're going to see in a second why the learning out an extra drasha is significant. We talk about the Ramban in a second. Mitzad haShorash Vazeh, HaKavui Lav Hayalu Litchog V'Perasos Shashmog B'Gemaras Makos Harbe. He said, based on this principle that the Rambam established for us, he has difficulty interpreting this Gemara and Makos. Why? That says if you eat these different types of insects, you get four, five, six Malkos. He has a novel interpretation that's not in line with the previous interpretations. The Rambam says, nobody before me came up with this explanation. This is my own original explanation. Meaning, if you get more malchus for doing one thing, it means that there is an extra prohibition. What does that mean? As we explained before. So, what does it mean? So, it means not that it's more than one set of malchus for eating one type of thing. It's that this insect is subject to more than one prohibition. What do I mean? Kigon shetomar shetia tchunasa b'inyan shev chalikrosa sheretz aretz. V'sheretz ha'of, kigon sheyula knafayim. V'sheretz ha'mayim shetoshu gam kimayim yimiyosa milfefes v'avir. According to the Rambam, the different types of insects, whether they crawl on the ground or live on the air and the water, are separate commandments. That's what he said. This commandment is Mitzvah Samach Daled 164, is specifically for water shiratzim, which the other interpretations don't have. So what does it mean? If you eat a bug that lives on land and water, so that's extra set of malchus. And if it lives in the air also, so that's extra set of malchus right there. Okay? So it just means that the bugs that for which you get more sets of malchus have more properties that render them subject to different prohibitions. That they live on different places. He said it's not the smoothest interpretation of this Gemara. Oh, thank you. It's not the smoothest interpretation of this Gemara, but this is the way the Ram interprets it. So he says, so we have right now 1, 2, and 3, but how do you get to 4, 5, and 6? That's what the Rambam's interpretation of the Gemara is somewhat difficult. The Ramban has a much easier interpretation of this Gemara. The Ramban says he interprets it completely differently. He says that if it's repeated more than once in the Torah, then you get more sets of malchus depending on how many times this prohibition is repeated in the Torah. So if it's repeated twice and you learn out different halachos from each place, then it's necessary that the Torah repeated it more than once. But if it's just repeating it, you can't learn out anything from it, so then it means it's added as an extra set of malchus. It seems to me that a lot of these his proofs are as hard as a molten mirror. A molten mirror, like a mirror made of molten metal, which apparently they got very hard. That's how they used to make mirrors in those days.
So he's saying that.
Okay. Uperish Ashmua the Gemara Mak. Right, that's what all the. I don't know, but that's what a lot of these books that have come out with all these very intense instructions for checking vegetables for insects, they're used to say, you know, eating insects is much worse than eating pork, so therefore you have to be extra careful. You should think about it even more carefully, but that's not the standard Jewish mindset, and as we pointed out, that perhaps is for good reason. So he thinks that the Ramban's interpretation of the Gemara is better, which he often thinks the Ramban is right against when his disagreements with the Rambam. So the Ramban says that prohibition doesn't go just on fish that lack the kosher signs. That's anything that lives in water that doesn't have fins and scales. Not like the Rambam said that it's only going on fish that don't have fins and scales. So that is already, we know that you're not allowed to eat the Yisharet Samayim based on that pasuk. It talks about over there that you must eat only kosher fish, and it uses the lashon of sheretz when it talks about the non-kosher ones. He's very politically correct when he closes the discussion. He thinks the Ramban is really correct, but he says, well, you know, kindalach, you know, when you grow up and you become a huge Talmidei Chachamim, so you can choose between the Rambam's opinion and the Ramban's opinion. We talked about why you're not allowed to eat certain things above. So, for example, leeches, bugs, things like that, all these things that live in water are all called sheretz hamayim. Everybody agrees they're usher. It's just a question on what pasuk you derive it from. It's in all places, in all times, males and females. If it's tiny, you still receive lashes, as we pointed out before. If you shlema, ino loka shiocha men kezayis. You can't even eat the tiniest bit, even if it's not whole, on the Daraisa level, because we hold Chatzi Shir Aser Min HaTorah, Shechatzi Shir HaDaraisa Hu Aser, which is a machlokes, whether less than a shir is still prohibited Min HaDaraisa, you just don't get the penalty, or not, according to Reish Lakish, it's not prohibited at all. Aval Ein Chiyuv HaMalkos, El Al Vachilas HaShir HaMakubal, but the penalty is only for eating the shear, is a kezias or a whole insect. Mitzvah Kuf Samech Hei, 165. Shlo lechol min hashrotzim hamisave min haipush. should not eat bugs that come from rotting fruits. Shelo lechol me'ashotzim ha'misavim min ha'ipushim, ava b'yishenu min yadua shelo yishava mizachar u'nekeva, even if it's spontaneously generated, as they believe, then it doesn't, it's not created through sexual reproduction. Shenemar velot sitamu es nafshosichem b'chol asheretz haromeis al haretz, v'lashon sifra asheretz haromeis al haretz, ava b'yishenu paraverove. So the based on the Nachim Medrash, it's the ones that don't breed, they just spontaneously generate. The Chos of Rambam, Zichron of Racha, the Rambam says, Kiva sheretz hanola mizuchar munikevas nemar sheretz, shoretz, that the verb shoretz, crawl, whatever, it goes ones that are created through reproduction, vasheru nasa mina ipush nemar lavromates, and it's spontaneously generated, that comes from rotting fruits, because it's called romes al ha'adama, different, just different verbs, what? V'haramban zichron al-bracha hikshalav min ha-mikroz dichsi v'chosav ki b'chulan yomar romes v'shoreitz v'ashoreitz yadua. He says, Ramban again disagrees, he says, both can be called romes and shoreitz, they're just synonyms, there's no specific halachic distinction between the two words. Dinei ha-ktzarim, again, the Ramban wouldn't count as a sever mitzvah at all, it's just to be mechazik, to strengthen the idea that we're not allowed to eat bugs. The next tzarim shekol pratei yikansu bichlal echad shenesr lanu kol shartzei ha'ipush sheba'olam aromsim ba'aretz chutz mishartzei ipush ha'peros v'dasu shama harshnekru v'shartzei ipushei ha'mayim shebekelim ha'kol kemo shamarnu lamala. What are the two exceptions? That bugs that generated from fruits after they were detached from the ground, or if they were in vessels of water as opposed to in flowing bodies of water. Benoeges b'chol makom v'chol zman b'chlar nekevos all places and all times males and females over alev achal biryam b'kol ha'ipushim sheva ashbos v'chol makomos any of these things tiluk tanah shebiktanah see the tiniest mikevan she'achala v'hushleim v'yishleim alea it's whole you receive lashes v'yishleim ashir b'chazayis k'vashemarino again it's kezayis if it's not whole.